Hi, it's Mario from Best Decks, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hello everybody, and welcome back. We were kind of off for a week and a half there, and we've been a little patchy lately. We apologize. We're still putting out content. We're still creating content. Don't look at me like that. We still pump out content. Maybe 3 episodes a month lately instead of 4, but we've still been throwing it out there.
We show up, but it's not as moderate as we used to. I mean, once in a while we're actually happy to talk to you, but this is like one of those seasons of a show you really love where you're like, we'll skip that one, go to the next season.
You know what it is? Ever since kind of the end of summer, it's just been a little choppy schedule wise and we've had some guests drop out and we've had things going on, and I still think we've put out, like I said, probably 3 episodes a month for the last 3 months. So we're okay. We're getting back on track here. Stop grilling me, people. Stop flooding my email box. My email box. My inbox. Stop flooding my email box.
Stop sending electronic mail, okay? Stop. Getting sick of it.
Stop flooding us with, hey, where's the cast? Hey, where is it this week? I don't know what to do. I don't want to go hang out with my wife and children. Yeah. I need my episode.
Stop telling me that you've kidnapped some people and won't release them until the next episode shows up. I do what I want. I don't care about your hostages, okay?
Exactly. I mean, and hey, I gotta say, our last couple episodes have been pretty fantastic, if you ask me. So
exactly,
it's I don't want to hear it. I really don't want to hear it.
It's quality, not quantity. Well, it's neither, actually, but still.
Yeah. So why is that? Okay. Anyway, yeah. So the last couple episodes have been great. Like the last one, we had Tracy Edwards on, and she sailed around the world, first woman to ever do that with an all-female crew. Before that, we had our Halloween spectacular, and then we had Danny and Lori from All That. So I don't want to hear your crap, people. We're not putting up with it, is what I'm saying.
Basically, shut up, Dom. That's all we're saying. Shut up, Dom.
Yeah, please leave us alone. Like, enough already. Enough.
Exactly.
But
actually see your kid instead of listening to us, okay?
Yeah. So welcome back, everybody. If you are just tuning in, we are Verbal Shenanigans. We are a weekly podcast, or just about weekly. And we basically look for interesting people to talk to. We try to discuss life and its obstacles and observations and things like that, and we enjoy bringing you. We are 266 episodes into this journey, climbing our way slowly to 300, Berlu. 300 episodes.
Just clinging on for life until we hit that and get that big cash money when Disney Plus buys us.
No. I don't. We can't be associated with. You don't need any more Disney in your life, Berlu.
I don't think I have choices in the matter, to be honest, Scott, but continue with your conversation.
You don't have any choice.
I feel in some way, even if like the world ended and we were in like a bomb shelter and there was zombies outside, Izzy would still find a way to somewhat logically say we have to go to Disney.
We'll just dodge them. We'll get on the rides that are still open.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're not tall enough for all the rides. We'll just go on the other ones.
So our last episode, it took me a couple days to get it up after we had recorded it. Because basically I had the worst luck I could possibly have had getting an episode up. So I've been using the main – I have to edit these podcasts together – You know, because we generally record like 7 to 8 hours and just cut out all the good stuff and give it to you in a nice 90-minute package or so.
When that best of DVD comes out, you're going to be so surprised. Yeah, we are very articulate, apparently.
The lost tapes. But so the system I've been using to edit the podcast forever is very old. It basically serves as a podcast editor. That's all it does. It's a very old computer. We're talking probably more than 10 years old or whatnot. But I didn't really do anything on it. I don't go on the internet with it. I don't do anything. I just kind of edit the podcast and edit some video stuff on it. So the other day, I and all my stuff is there. Like, I could do it on other computers, but all my stuff is there. Like, all our little songs and all the episodes from the past, if I ever want to grab them. And it's just kind of a workflow I've had for how long we've been doing this? 5 years? Whatever the hell it is.
5 or 6. One of them.
So, five or six, one of those two.
Yeah. Berlew, it's been 12. Damn it! Wasn't in 5 or 6.
But, so I've been just using it, you know, like, I edit it, I get it up. But I know this computer's been on the fritz for a while. It's kind of been, you know, a little touchy.
Mm.
So the other day I go to edit and nothing comes up. I can't open the programs. Everything's freezing up the minute I touch it. I try to do some things. I just can't do it. I just assumed, okay, this computer's finally saying it's saying its goodbyes to me.
The computer is actually saying, "I'm getting sick of you." That's how bad our show has gotten.
He's like, you could have ended this at 200. That's what he was saying. Mm-hmm. You could have wrapped this thing up and showed it to your kids one day. That's about it. But we keep pushing forward. So that computer, I'm like, whatever, I'll just edit it on the other computer. It was a pain in the butt. So that was like one night. I'm like, I'll just do it tomorrow on the other computer. So the other computer, I couldn't find the charger for it. Eventually found it. Go to load that thing up. Edit the whole podcast. Get it all ready to go out. And as I go to send it out, the computer crashes. I said, okay, whatever. Go to send it out again. The computer crashes. Go to send it out again. The computer crashes. You can see the pattern that's forming here.
Hmm.
Now, eventually I try to restore some things, and all of a sudden that computer shuts down. Cannot turn it back on again. Just keeps going to like a restart menu and freezing, restart menu and freezing, restart menu and freezing. So there is the second attempt at editing the entire podcast in the software that I usually use. And it lost. So we're talking maybe. So now we probably, for one episode, we probably realistically have about 4 hours in, 4.5 hours. Now, guys, the podcast doesn't take 4 hours to edit ever. Okay. Maybe I'll sit down with it for a half hour, get it done, get it out. And then it takes me a little while to write up the description and get some graphics out. And that's kind of it. So now I got to go on to computer number 3. Okay. Which is, so it's usually I do Mac, so it's a PC, so it has different software. So I basically have to like dive in and kind of learn a whole audio program, and they're all different. They're all like, they do different things. Like the way you do it on one is not the other, moving file. So I gotta say, I was probably another maybe 2.5 hours trying to learn everything and get it out. So that last episode, if you guys don't like it, I don't care. I'll put it out again. I'll put it out every week as episode 266, 267, 268. I think we heard this before. No. You're getting. So about eight hours of frustration, basically put into last week's episode with Tracy. So Tracy, we loved you, but you brought a. I don't know what you did to my computer. I blame Tracy Edwards.
You blame her specifically.
Yep. It was all her fault.
Oh, you think like God is like this masochist or just like she hater that he's like, if a whole group of women want to sail around the world, I have to take something back from anybody who supports them.
I think
that's what God did.
I think you mean misogynist.
Well, either or.
I mean, he could be a masochist, too. He could be a masochist. But No, yeah, I don't know what she did to my computer, but it fell apart, and so now we're on the backup. We're on like the Nathan Peterman.
Third string
corner. Yeah. We're on the third string.
Josh Johnson.
So guys, we are very close to just this podcast just not being up anymore because I have no computers left.
Will you finally give up Windows Vista? Would you?
No! I love it!
That was the best operating system of all time. That's why it was only out for a year. Too many people loved it. Windows is like, if we don't get rid of it, we won't get more money.
So that is that's my commitment to you people. 8 hours, you know, on one episode of a measly little audio podcast. So I hope you're enjoying what you're hearing today, because a lot of love has gone into this. A lot of love.
Scott, who's that in the background? Johnny Manziel assigned him after this computer went down.
Yeah. Where is Johnny Manziel?
Unemployed.
He's not in the Canadian league?
No, he went to Canada. He basically was the third stringer. Then he got traded to the worst team in the Canadian Football League. And he did meh, as best as I can remember. And then it was so bad, he actually got fired from the CFL. Fired. Not released. Fired. To the point where he couldn't re-sign with any other CFL team, even if he wanted to.
So what's next for him? XFL? Is he trying for that?
Well, he was in AAF after the CFL. He started like two games, then the league folded. For what I understand, he might not have a chance with the XFL because, one, they're kind of trying to not be a gimmick league, so they basically assign teams like quarterbacks who are on like practice squads and stuff like that, who they feel have like talent and can show something. And there's also Vince didn't want anybody with a criminal record in the XFL.
That was a big thing he came out with.
You're fired. Johnny, you're fired. He's basically just trying to whitewash everything that was the former XFL. He's literally saying, all right, I'm not going to play music. I'm not going to put on
no fireworks storylines.
I'm not going to do storylines. I'm not going to bring my wrestlers around. I'm not going to have strippers doing cheerleading. In fact, there's no cheerleaders in the XFL for what I've heard.
Should have done all dudes. Really went the complete opposite way.
Yes, gyrate. Yes.
You cannot shake your hips right. You're not in time. You're fired.
I don't want a woman anywhere near my leg. What's that? I went too far. Come back. Come back.
You're fired.
And a funny little anecdote about the AAF. Apparently, another spring football league bought all their equipment. The Major League Football League.
I hope it's called the Major League Football League.
I think it is the MLFL. I think that's their initial. So
they have two leagues in their title.
I think it's ML. It's like Major League Football something, and I think it might be the MLFL. But they actually occurred. Then they folded. Then they wanted to come back, and their like big news was they saved a couple millions of dollars by just buying all the AAF stuff.
Wow, I mean that's basically like, I don't know. I just feel like it's just like some sleazy promoter just waiting for some football league to own so he has some way to like launder money through. There's no way like there's any audience for that.
I can't fathom why we have like 20 different spring football leagues attempting to get in there. I mean, we're getting to the point where they're just going to Pop Warner games and bringing kids out and all to start the league.
Yeah, like what do you think would what do you think would work to entice this football hungry country to even watch football after the Super Bowl.
I think it's possible. I mean, AAF had some decent football there. I mean, the USFL was pretty successful going out there.
USFL, I think, all in the spring?
They were in the spring. Yeah, they started in the, I think, like March. I don't think they did directly after the Super Bowl. I think they had a little time off, then they started.
Right.
And basically what happened was Trump owned the Generals, the New Jersey Generals. There was basically two big owners, a guy who owned...
Dude, I told you not to bring up politics during this podcast, all right?
Well, there's no way to get around. I won't get into what he did after the league, but
that's
I'll tell
it.
You
That's it. We're doing story. 30 minutes of Trump now. We're doing 30 minutes of Trump. Go ahead. What are your feelings on Donald Trump? Good president or best president? Go.
All right, I'm going to get back to my story. So, like, there was a group of owners who are like, we're doing fine in the spring league. You know, we're getting some money. We're not stable yet because teams were folding in and out. For every good team, there was like two or three bad teams. Trump insisted on, we have to, if we want to be anything, we have to go in the fall. And so there was the whole lawsuit. They actually announced the fourth year would be in the fall, even though it never got played. And they basically won the lawsuit. But in the lawsuit, basically the jurors said, okay, there was a monopoly by the NFL, but it wasn't a monopoly that was preventing the USFL from doing any kind of business. So they awarded them $1. And the league basically had no money and blew their load, for lack of a better term, on this lawsuit, so it disbanded. And I will say at least a rumor was the reason why Donald Trump bought the New Jersey Generals and fought so hard was all he cared about was actually owning an NFL team, where he had a secret meeting with who was the guy before
Ukraine?
No. There was a guy before Goodell, Paul, not Tagliabue. I think it was a guy before that, Rozelle. I want to say Pete Rozelle. But anyway, the head of the NFL, he had a secret meeting and basically said, I don't care about the USFL. I can give two whatevers about what happens to this. What will it take for me to own an NFL team? And Pete basically replied, I will, as long as I am commissioner, you will never be allowed to own a team in the NFL. And he actually tried after that. He tried to, he came close. I think they were the second ownership group to try to buy the Bills.
Say what you want about that guy. He won't be told no. He will figure out a way to do what he, like, apparently a lot of the, From what I hear, or I don't know, someone, I forget who was saying, like, someone told him basically at the, like, the Obama inauguration dinner or something like that, like, right, making comments to him or something like that, like, oh, like, as if you could be president of the United States, or someone's making jokes or something like that, and he basically turned around and, like, within the next couple weeks was
came
like,
down that escalator.
Yeah, I'm gonna run for this, and just kind of plowed his way into winning, I guess. I have officially resigned from even knowing what's going on in this country. I have resigned for the last 6 months or so. I don't know anything about anything.
There's this cool meme going around with housewives pointing at a cat.
Yeah, what is that? It took me like... Here's how bad it is. I looked it up and still didn't get it.
I just know... I somewhat understand it has something to do with one of those Real Housewife TV shows. I don't really know. It took off like wildfire.
It sure did.
Once in a blue moon, there's a cute one. In the long run of what does it do? I don't know, but we'll keep seeing it until the next thing shows up.
Yeah, I didn't get that one. Usually I'm on top. This is how I know, like, my grip on, I think this is what happens when you get old, right? Like you just, your grip on kind of what's going on or what matters in the world or what's hot or what's cool just slowly starts to just get looser and looser and looser until you start to kind of pad your own things that matter in your life and what you care about, and you just kind of separate and separate and separate until you just kind of live in your own little world and then die.
Well, what you'll eventually do is you just find the five people who still agree with you on everything that you... No, seriously, Twisted Sister is the best rock group ever. And it's everybody's like, no, you're nuts. No, you're nuts. No, you're nuts. Yeah, I can see that. All right, I'm hanging with you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. I look at the impeachment thing, no idea what's going on anymore. Then all these people, like, I'll see these people make political jokes about specific people. No idea who half these guys are. And I just know less and less and less. And I just realized that not caring is a whole lot easier than caring.
Well, I mean, you figure we got to reserve our energy for next year.
Oh, God.
Because that's going to be a whole different barrel of fun there. If there is a time to say, you know what? I don't need Facebook or Twitter or for any reason. I guess we'll be fine with Instagram, but there'll still be pieces out there. That might be the best time to do it, ladies and gentlemen. If what we were talking about earlier with the bomb shelter and the zombies outside, consider doing that in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Facebook's algorithm would have worked better. Because, you know, like, the only things I really look at are, like, I don't know, comedians, bits. Sometimes I go down a wormhole, and I got to tell you, the Facebook algorithm with the videos, like, if you ever click on the video thing and then go, like, video after video, it's pretty damn tailored to what you watch and what you like. But it's amazing how good they can get that just per person. So if you're, like, this right-wing or left-wing nut, you know, like, all that's being funneled to you is just everything that you want to see and everything that makes you just angry about whatever. Like, mine is all, like, people playing pranks on each other and dog videos.
Yeah, I mean, this is why it doesn't pay. Like, I always say I'm independent, so I actually will listen to far left, far right, and in between.
Of course.
And Lord, when I get to that video, like, it's just a bunch of, oh my God, I don't need that. I don't need that. I don't need that. I don't need that. Where the hell? Finally, I'll get to that dude who does pizza reviews. That's about it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. The more you close in your walls and you're just like, I like dumb things. I like pizza. I like doing comedy. I love my little podcast. And then everything else just seems to go away. And I feel like it's just a way better way to live.
I feel we should be able to create an account for every situation. Just, no, this is the Mike Berlew, I don't want to hear crap account.
Yeah.
Like my other account, I'll hear some crap. But this account, I don't want to hear crap.
I mean, it's better. Again, ignorance is bliss, right? There's a reason that statement exists. Mm-hmm. Because I cannot imagine the time that some of these people just spend reading these garbage articles that you click on them and you look at the source and you're like, okay, I know exactly what this is going to be about. And then you look at the source on the other one and you're like, okay, I know exactly what this is going to be about. And the garbage, and you just commenting on things and ranting about things and going on Facebook and saying this and that. It is exhausting even just reading. I can't imagine living that life where you're just so triggered and angry by everything someone else says, or that becomes your thing.
And heaven forbid you ask a question about it. I'm like, you read something and go, well, this doesn't make sense because X, Y, Z. And then you are just hammered in the replies where it's just like, how dare you think that or question that or whatever. Yeah. It's just silly. And all. I said I like Tulsi Gabbard and I got chewed out by about eight different groups.
Wow, what a jerk you are.
I know.
Wait, who do you like? Who do you like out of the Democratic Party as far as running?
I mean, seriously, I like Tulsi Gabbard. Yeah. I mean, she's got no prayer. She's like at 2%, and she's basically getting fought on by Hillary, because that's the big rumor. To add to the do I really want to know this, apparently the Russians have sent out like have a bot system to kind of, you know, tier the votes for the Democrat side, and they're saying that Russians are pushing for a third candidate, which would be Tulsi Gabbard, since she's kind of in the middle. And it's,
you heard it. Mike supports Russians. Mike supports collusion.
Well, you know, I mean, they got some nice looking ladies out there. So
I could use a little collusion.
Yeah? Just a little? Just a little?
Just a little collusion.
But
I like... go ahead.
But I kind of like... I'm looking for somebody in the middle. I don't want to go far left or far right, which is why I kind of like it. But it seems like everybody is like, no, we haven't gone far enough on either side. So it's just going to be weird. The Democrats are actually adding people as we're going along.
They're
going
to eat themselves like they always do.
Yeah, it was like they had like 14, and it was like the big joke. Oh, there's too many. Then all of a sudden, as like one or two no names dropped out, like four or five people somehow got back in.
Bloomberg's in. Democrats, they're going to eat themselves just like they did in the last election. They're all going to go with their little groups. But even if it comes down to three or four, they're all going to align with them. And then if their little guy doesn't win, they're going to go. They're not going to vote the party line or whatever. And they're going to go independent or green or this or that. And then freaking big Donald is just going to. I don't think he's just going to win. I think he's going to crush this election. I think he's going to win by a bigger margin than last time.
I see a similar result. I see him getting the electoral votes. I still see him losing the popular vote, because I think the big cities people really hate him.
Right.
So they just eat up more numbers there, but I can still see him finding that beltway and taking care of business like the last time.
Yeah, I like out of all the people I've actually like spent any time listening to, I actually like Mayor Pete. I think he's very. I mean, I know he's only a mayor. That's the one thing I don't like about him. Like, he hasn't really kind of climbed into. But that might be a good thing. I mean, Donald Trump never did. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like his qualifications. Like, he's actually like a smart dude. Like he's served and he's done this and that. He's educated. So I kind of like the fact that he's not just like this buffoon. Unfortunately, I know in the United States or right now, basically anywhere, like I just don't see anybody voting a gay man into office.
There's enough of the backwoods people where it's going to hurt them. I mean, needless to say, I mean, regardless of what you thought of Hillary, either way, you know she lost some votes because she was a woman. We're slowly getting there. Just any ethnicity winning the election was amazing. So, but it's just that slow build and all. It's like, yeah, we voted somebody in black, but I mean, a woman. A gay guy?
I don't know. But if I... okay, so, like, take the general idiot out of... You know, take the general idiot and take the fact that he's a gay guy out of the equation before they had... So the general idiot would love that, you know, he went to Harvard. I think that's pretty impressive that he...
Sounds like a fancy school to me.
That he was a... You know, he had a military career... You know, he was state treasurer. Like, I don't know. I think, like, I don't know.
From probably Indiana, got captured.
Also from Indiana. Like, he's not from Los Angeles or New York. He was like he did stuff in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Like, I think some of his things I think are intriguing to everybody. But I know there's going to be a whole bunch of people out there that couldn't get past him being. Homosexual, which I think is pretty lame at this point, you know. Like, but I don't know.
Well, the smartest thing to do is get a 77-year-old man who touches women weirdly in the neck.
Yeah.
Up there.
Yeah. Yeah. We are going to be joined by a woman by the name of Marielle Loveland. Not sure if that... Loveland. I'm not sure if that's her real name. We're going to have to find out because that's a pretty good... it's a pretty good musician's name. Okay.
I feel we should also ask for her social security number just to make extra sure her answer.
Well, that is a requirement of our podcast.
Yeah, the routing number of your checking account. You know, the standard operating procedure for most podcast interview shows.
It's our onboarding process. Our HR, yes. HR department is quite... They're strict up there.
We had to pay for a lot of things. You know, we have that king over in that African country who has to get his money released. So, you know, we got to help him out and we have certain requirements, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Susan in HR does not mess around. She is by the book, lover or hater. Yeah. You know, she keeps us in line, keeps the onboarding process, the W-2s going. So, you know, we're doing a tough job, but we got to stay, stay right on top of things. So,
funny story. I've been on the show for about 6 years. Never met her once.
Well, she tries. She's not a face to face person. She's behind the scenes. You know, paperwork, keep all our ducks in a row. You know, all that money we got to file at the end of the year. It's hard. It's a hard job. But we're joined by Marielle Loveland, and. She, you might know her from her former band, the Candy Hearts. She's also now part of a band called Best X, and she's done a lot of things in the music world, including playing with Weezer and touring on the Warped Tours, doing things all over the country and world, if you will. So she just released a new album. Their new song "Bad Love" is up. So we're gonna give Marielle a call. Mariel, first off, thanks for giving us a few minutes here on the show. And
of course, thank you.
No problem. First off, is Loveland your real last name, or is that like a stage name, or were you born with like the best stage name ever?
You know, after I graduated from high school, it never occurred to me that people would think that my name was fake. But everyone started asking me that after high school.
Really?
And it's not. That's just my dad's last name.
It's got a very, very good stage, you know.
I like it.
Front man, you know, front singer vibe. It's got a good presence to it. So
I guess it was meant to be.
So, I would just answer, my name is Terrence Wachowski.
Yeah,
Terrence. Just throw him off.
Right. So, are you guys hearing an echo in the background?
No. Oh, that could have been a car horn.
So where are we calling you at?
I'm at home in Brooklyn. But I have the window open. My room gets so much hotter than everyone else's. I know, that's very interesting.
All right, so tell me, so you were in the Candy Hearts for a long time, and now you're Best X. Is there a lot of similarities, or is this a completely different project for you?
Now,
I know there's certain members, there's certain vibes. That's what I was reading. I couldn't quite pick up exactly what Best X is compared to Candy Hearts.
I know. Okay, because I feel like it transformed into something. Like, it just, like, took its own thing. And I did not have control over what it took. Because originally, it was, like, me and my old bandmates were just, like, relaunching this project more in, like, the way that we wanted to do it. Just like a new face on like the same thing that we've always been doing. And then, you know, my old bandmates got like married and jobs and stuff while I was working on relaunching, you know, our band.
Right.
And so then it sort of morphed into being like literally just my vision. And I know Candy Hearts was like really heavily, heavily my vision. But, you know, I always got their input and stuff. I always asked for their input.
Right.
And this thing just kind of took a life on its own. And it feels so different, even though, like, you know, we just played on Saturday. I played a few of our old songs and, like, some of our new songs. Because I didn't want it to be this thing where it's like I was starting a brand new project and then abandoning the fans that I feel like I've kind of grown up with through, like, my 20s.
Right.
But it feels really new now, even though we're playing old stuff. So it's really hard for me to say exactly like what it is, because I feel like Candy Hearts also felt so much like myself. Like, I know it was like a band and this looks like a solo project, but it functions in exactly the same way as our old, like as Candy Hearts functioned.
Right.
So it feels like the same thing. It just feels like me with a different name.
So if
and Candy Hearts felt like me with this name.
So if I relaunched the podcast and just got rid of Mike, it would be kind of like that, right? It would be better. It'd be more improved.
No, I don't think I'm more improved.
No,
I think that my music just sounds different.
Right.
So you just changed my voice. I'll be
not
different.
Improved at all. I feel like any day I don't spend talking to my bandmates, I'm like sad.
So you're playing both Candy Hearts things and new music.
Yeah.
When we come to see you, right?
Mm.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Good, Mike.
So we'll just start right off the bat and all. I mean, where do you get your musical love from? How early were you when you started getting into it?
I mean, I think I always loved music. Like, I mean, I'm sure everyone says that. Like, I remember listening to the Beach Boys as a little kid and like the Beatles. I was just talking to my friend, like I was obsessed with Magical Mystery Tour. It was like my favorite. And he's like, that's a really weird Beatles album to be your favorite. And I'm not sure why. But that was like my one.
Right.
And I loved music and stuff like that. I remember listening to Britney Spears, and this is going to sound so funny, but her song Lucky. I was like, no song more beautiful than that has ever existed. I wish I could make something that beautiful. And
have you succeeded?
I think on the new album, maybe. Maybe right? Not on the old ones, though. I'm not sure. Well, maybe. But yeah, I picked up guitar when I was 15. And, you know, I was always writing poetry before that, which is like very similar. It's just like a more free kind of form thing than writing song lyrics, mm-hmm. which is like a certain puzzle you have to fit together. So I just got a guitar and I kind of just like hit the ground running with that. I remember being really inspired by Bright Eyes and being like, if this dude who like can't sing that well, mm-hmm. who just has like this vision and just like plays really basic stuff on guitar, if he can do this thing that's like so meaningful and massive, I thought maybe I could too.
Right. I mean,
so I just started.
Bob Dylan's been doing it for 50 years at this point, you know? He's been,
yeah,
you know.
Unfortunately, it's a little harder for a woman to like not sound like Mariah Carey, but you know.
So are you like, we bring out a lot of like artists and a lot of musicians and comics and things like that. And I'm always fascinated by the way people write music or write songs, because every single person you talk to has their own kind of thing. Some people are pen to paper, write it all out, flush it all out, record it all out. Some guys are jam with their bandmates and see what comes out. Some come with an idea and then bring it to practice. What is your like preferred writing style or technique, at least as far as the modern stuff?
Well, the writing technique hasn't changed at all from how I used to write songs for Candy Hearts, mm-hmm. How I write songs for this. I remember when I wrote the Best Ways to Disappear is when I really started this habit of sitting in the bathtub and trying to just create a song out of nothing. And usually I'll get a little hint of something that comes to me, like a melody or something that comes to me on like a walk or driving or, you know, in the shower. And I'll retain that and then later sit down with my guitar and try and write the whole song. And then after that, I'll sit down with like a producer and try and flesh out the rest of it. Like I'll have ideas of the direction. I pretty much hear the whole thing in my head.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then I go to the producer and I'm like, this is what it sounds like in my head. Can you make it sound like that on the computer?
do you require a bathtub in the recording studio?
I feel like that would be a little inappropriate.
I mean, it'd be good harmonics in there and stuff.
Exactly.
We actually recorded the new album, the EP that's coming out, in a kitchen, most of it. So, actually all of it in a kitchen. That's cool. Yeah.
So slowly go from room to room is the basic concept.
Yeah, maybe next time we'll upgrade to like a bedroom.
Mike, when you hear the Shed album, it is unbelievable. It is.
It's epic. Ode to a Plow would be an amazing song. So when you have the melody in your head and all, when you get with your bandmates, do you kind of just say, this is what I think about? Or do they have like a lot of free range where like, well, this is how I see the drums and all that?
I mean, I ask because I don't play drums. So I'm like, this is kind of what I'm thinking. What do you think? But the last one, I mean, our old albums were really heavily, since our first guitarist left the band, when I started the band with him, we would really nail out guitar parts and stuff and bass and like stuff like that together kind of heavily. Even though I feel like I had the ultimate say, he would just call out like, what are you thinking? This is like really bad. And then I'd be like, oh my God, you're right. He had like good taste. and then after he left, like he left after The Best Ways to Disappear. Since then, it's kind of just been like me sitting down pretty heavily with a producer and being like, this is what I want. What do you think? It is definitely very collaborative. But it is, yeah, kind of like my vision. And I'm like, this is the direction I want. But if someone has like an idea, if they happen to have one, I'm like, oh, cool. Please tell me.
So now you've been going as with Candy Hearts and now Pest X. And I mean, as far as online, it tells me you've been going since 2009. So you're at a decade into doing this music thing. Are you, is your touring schedule like, are you going all over the country? Are you, what is next as far as performing live? Are you guys planning to do, like, I know you've been on Warped Tours and a whole bunch of different things. What is your touring schedule like? How many nights a week are you guys playing? And is this your only job, music?
Well, it was my only job for a while.
Okay.
When we were doing Warped Tour and all that kind of stuff, I think in our off time, I had picked up a job at like a startup.
Right.
As like a staff writer.
Nice.
But no, my day job right now is I'm a freelance journalist. And our touring schedule is much different than it was in Warped Tour. We've been through like a bunch of agents. Whether it's like leaving the industry or you're not making us enough money or whatever. So we don't have an agent right now, and we're looking to kind of be taken. Like someone, please take me on tour. I don't want a headline tour saying like, you know, 50 fans every night, even though I love them and I like that, but like, it's not going to help take us to the next level. It's wonderful to be able to play for, you know, the people who have always been there for us. But like, you know, our van is up on blocks in my dad's driveway, and it needs to be, I don't know, it needs to be fixed. And like, I got to make that money. We got to grow our fan base.
Well, don't you worry. After this episode is released, I mean, they're going to be like knocking down the windows, you know, putting tires on the van. You know, numbers are going to be ridiculous after you're on this show.
I'm, you know, that's a lot. I'm riding, lots riding on you.
Boy, are you going to be disappointed.
So when you're touring, you know, what do you kind of prefer with like the crowds? Do you like that wild ruckus kind of dancing all around crowds? You like them to just like staying around, singing along to the songs? What do you prefer?
At this point, I prefer just that people are there. I don't care who. yeah, it's really nice when people sing the songs with me. Like, they know the words to some like stuff that I wrote in my bedroom when I was like upset. That's amazing. It's like, no one listens to me except for like our fans and like my Google Home. Like everyone else, I feel like I'm talking to, and it's like, did you just retain what I'm saying? But when people are like singing back words to you, that's like crazy. I still can't wrap my head around it.
I mean, yeah, I think that's the kind of, you know, what is fun about making art and being able to put it out to, you know, whoever's out there. You never know who catches it. Once you actually see someone, you know, catch it or hear someone say, hey, I listened to this or like that, I don't think that ever gets old. whether it's doing comedy on stage and someone coming up to you at the end of the show, hey, you know, that was a great set. You know, like it to me, it never gets old anyway, but.
People have gotten tattoos of my handwriting. I'm like, I'm not qualified for this. It's like so flattering.
Wow.
It's like I've made that much of an impact on someone that they want literally my handwriting on their body.
I would feel obligated to do laser removal if anybody used my handwriting on their body. Mm. It is that bad. It looks, my handwriting's like a ransom note.
My handwriting's not great, but I try really extra hard for that kind of instance.
Yeah, I just use a bunch of big letters and everything. Nobody's going to be asking for that. They'll need a full back tattoo for one sentence from me.
I once signed my name. We were like checking into this hotel. We were on tour somewhere, some Red Roof Inn at like 4 a.m. And, you know, you have to sign the thing that says you're not going to like destroy everything. Whatever night manager was there, I signed the thing. And he looked at my signature and was like, are you serious? How old are you? Are you like 10 years old with that? It was that bad, my signature, that he like the dude working at Red Roof Inn at 4 a.m. laughed at me.
And now
that's like the biggest insult in the world, a 4 a.m. Red Roof Inn manager taunting you.
Yeah.
And now that guy has it as his neck tattoo. So I gotta ask you, I was looking into your career and whatnot. What really amazed me was your opportunity to perform with Weezer. You know, I guess that was what, 2015, I think it was.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, that amazed me too.
I mean, there's a band I grew up with, you know, I still remember when they reunited and the Green album came out. I remember being in high school and like making sure I was at the record store the day it came back out. Cause I had loved the band so much in the first two albums. And it's amazing to see they're still just cranking out stuff. But what was that? How did that come about? And what was that like?
That was like this crazy full circle moment for me, because the first song I ever learned how to play like the actual chords on the guitar instead of just like, you know, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star or whatever, was Butterfly from Pinkerton. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was on vacation with my parents and I was just like trying really hard to learn this song. And I was like telling my dad that I was like, I'm never going to get this. I just can't play these chords. And he was like, no. Once you'll hit like a wall and then you'll be able to play like, you know, anything that's like any chords, like pretty much.
Right.
And he was totally right. So that was like a huge full circle thing. And it came about, our manager hooked it up. She like knew their manager, whatever. And I was like crapping myself all night. I was like, I have to be like, I can't, people were offering me like lots of drinks and stuff. I'm like, I can't have anything. Yep, I can't have anything at all. Or like Green Room was like loaded with booze. I think like there was some guy there who was like in this massive band and I didn't know who he was. And he was telling me, like, my bandmate, I snuck my bandmates backstage. They weren't even allowed there because I was the only one who was like, got the pass. Cause it's like, you're the performer. You can, at this like live TV thing or whatever it was.
Right.
So my bandmate was like, do you know who that is? And I was like, I have no idea. I'm sharing a dressing room with this man. And he was like, oh, I would be nervous. Are you nervous? And I'm like, this guy who like fills huge rooms is telling me to be nervous. Now I'm like, I was like, cool, don't say that. I was so nervous. But yeah, it worked out fine. It was great.
So were you able to have a regular conversation with them afterwards, or did it still take you weeks to go, oh my God, what just happened here?
Well, I tried to not be like that. And I read all this stuff online, you know, as a kid about like Rivers being this like massive, like weirdo who introvert, hates everyone and doesn't want to talk to people.
Yep.
So I walked into the green room thinking, don't address him, don't talk to him, don't like annoy him. And I ended up looking like an asshole because he wasn't at all like, you know, what the rumors were about him, like right. That folklore of like Weezer was like not true at all. And I was a freaking insane person. But, you know, once I realized that, I was chill.
Now, did you guys have like rehearsal or whatnot? Or was it just
we rehearsed about 15 minutes before we went on. So we ran through it once. But I was, you know, in the car just constantly singing my part to this track on Spotify. They even put I think they were really nervous that I was going to like mess up because they had printed out the lyrics and put it on the ground in front of me as if I could read that without my glasses. And I didn't, of course I didn't need them. I was like, oh, I have to memorize this song. Like within 3 days, I've got it. I just did that like all day for 3 days.
That's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool highlight.
It was the only time I ever felt popular. Everyone on Warped Tour was like wanting to talk to me and hang out with me after that. I mean, it was very short lived. I sunk back into being like not the popular girl very quickly, but
did
it was
you,
a nice taste of the life.
Did you guys like doing the Warped Tours? I remember that was my thing when I was basically early high school. Every year going down to Asbury Park. Did you like the vibe of the Warped Tours, or was it a hard, you know, I can imagine it being a pretty hard...
pros and cons, I think, to stuff like that. You know, it's a really unfriendly place for women. We did it in a van because I feel like I was ill-advised. And I was led to believe that that was the best way for us to financially do it. And I don't think that was the case after the... I pretty much knew that wasn't the case the second I showed up. I was like, oh, crap. We could have gotten a bus and shared it with someone. It wasn't as expensive as I thought it would be. So we did it in a van. And I think that really is a testament to our friendship collectively, because none of us, I mean, you know, there were moments, but they were very short lived. And I think collectively, we all just got along so well. And I knew we had before, obviously. But they say that that will either make or break your band. If you do it in a van, it's like the thing that leads to a band breakup. And so I was worried, like, I'm going to hate these people or something. And it was the opposite. It made me really respect them a lot. I mean, I already respected them so much. They're my best friends. But, like, that was, like, a new level of, like, kinship, I feel like. But, I mean, it was hard. Like, I feel like it was really clicky. And if you're, like, kind of person who's, like, nervous... to like not as outgoing or not in one of the like cool bands who always does it, you're like sitting there at the catering table by yourself, just like high school. And it's a boys club. I know like a lot of the people back, like behind the scenes are women. And that's cool. But like, it's that whole like, you know, oh, good dude, great guy mentality where they all protect each other, even if they're like doing crappy things. And that is not tight, and that's hard to deal with, but I think every tour on that scene is like that pretty much. So that's same old. But other than that, it was like the best time. Like it's so much fun. It's like really like living in like a traveling circus.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I imagine. Did you guys do like the full summer? Yeah. That's a lot of dates.
It was 2 months straight, and I remember we drove straight across the country on the way back, and from Seattle to New York straight. And that was when I actually got mad at my bandmates, because I really didn't want to do that. I wanted to stop, but they just kept rotating drivers and drove straight. And then of course our transmission broke, just like I said it would. I don't want to be like, I told you so, because it's just a joke on me because I paid for it anyway, but I did tell them.
What would you say would be one city that most people don't think of as like a real like rock or music town that like really you had a great vibe with performing for?
I always had great vibes in like Richmond, Virginia. Mm. I feel like that's where we came up playing. That's the being in Richmond, Virginia and Nashville, North Carolina. Those two places are like the first times I really felt like my band could actually do something meaningful. On like the very first tours that we did, there were people there who were singing there. Like the DIY scene was amazing. And there was this whole network of people that just like came and like ran the whole East Coast DIY shows. And that to me was amazing and really unexpected.
Nice. So tell us about you released a new song about 2 months ago now. Called Bad Love. Is that tell us about the song, and is that part of an album that is forthcoming, or is this just okay, so tell us about that.
Well, the song is going to be on an EP that has some other songs on it. I don't know, what do you want to know about it?
Don't know, what's the song about? Where'd you
everyone listening should listen to it. The song is about, you know, it's interesting because someone asked me if the song is about like, you know, someone treating you like crap or whatever, because it's called Bad Love and it kind of sounds that way. But I think the real message of the song is more not that someone treats you poorly, but falling in love with someone who, you know, treats you fine, but not the way that you would want. Like, there's nothing wrong with what's going on, but it's just they're never going to give you what you need and what you want, but still doing it anyway.
Right.
So, yeah, because it bums me out, like, people thinking, like, oh, it's another song about another crappy person. And it's like, I don't know. Like, maybe the dude's a little insensitive, but, like, we all have our moments.
Yeah. So what about the EP? When is that coming out? How many songs are we looking at? Or is it still in the works?
I think, well, everything's recorded. I'm just kind of figuring out the details this week, actually. I had a meeting on Monday to try and sort out all of the details. I just made the track list yesterday. So there, I think it's going to be like 6 songs. Nice. And hopefully it'll come out in February, but that rides on like a couple of things, like, you know, pressing and videos and things that I have to do.
Right.
Well, it's hard to rely on other people for stuff. I'm not good at it.
Well, the song is up for anybody to go stream it, listen to it, check it out. Mario, we want to thank you for giving us a few minutes on the show here. We wish you, obviously, the best of luck with the EP that will come out hopefully in February. And we hope hope you get back out there and get that van off the bricks and start touring around this country again and getting your music out there. So thank you for giving us some time. Mike, you think if we were in a van doing a mobile Verbal Shenanigans touring the country, which, you know, some podcasts have done podcast tours. Our friends Lori Beth and Danny Tamborelli are currently kind of finishing up what they kind of did was a live podcast. How Did This Get Made? They do like kind of tours and do the podcast. So if we were touring around in a van, do you think that would be the end of the podcast? Would we be at each other's throats?
I'd be solid doing it. No, you might have some feelings and drive us into another lane and take care of everything, but I'd be perfectly fine with it. I would just keep on saying my usual witty repartee, and then you figure it out from there.
So your idea of us touring is me kind of in the driver's seat and you just doing your witty humor as you
yeah,
and just bombarding me with these witty lines over and over again. Yeah. So much so that I can't take it.
Just every time something comes to my head, I'm going to say to myself, don't leave it in the head. Scott needs a hearing, regardless of what's going on, what's the traffic, how long it's been since he slept. Just blur it out to Scott and see what his thoughts are in life.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I mean, yeah, that would be the end of the podcast. So,
yeah. That was my long answer. We had to fill a few minutes here. So,
I don't care about episode 300. But, Mario Loveland, everybody. All right, brother Mario Loveland on Verbal Shenanigans.
I still say we have to get the research team into that name. I refuse to acknowledge that's her Christian name. Refuse.
Her Christian name. Oh,
that's right.
Sorry. Yeah. You never know. But
so, yeah. A Verbal Shenanigans investigation report.
I feel like she downplayed how cool it was to probably perform with Weezer. She's like, oh, yeah, it was cool. You know, I was nervous, and it was pretty cool. That probably had to be a fantastic thing.
Well, it must have got weird that night. She yelled at him, you haven't been to anything since Pinkerton. So,
your other albums suck. And maybe she's not telling us the truth about all the booze in the green room.
True.
But, Berlo, you just came off a half marathon.
Yep. My first career half marathon. I just got that done last Saturday.
First off, congrats.
Well, thank you.
Second off, it is. I'll get the good stuff out of the way. It is very impressive, Berlo, that I've known you for quite a while now. And prior to, I don't know, a couple months ago, I never heard you say the word run.
Nah.
Maybe you were going on a beer run. Food run, mm-hmm. But I never heard you.
Once in a while, I had the
run. The runs, yeah. You listen to Run DMC occasionally, but never heard you say the word run. And you've quickly gone to from no running to a pretty significant race. So that's quite an achievement.
What it boiled down to, I could do long walks. I was never into any kind of jogging or running. I think that's was always like a sore point to me, where I figured I didn't have like really cardio to kind of do any of that stuff. So, I mean, it would be like, I would go out and like, oh, maybe I'll do a little jog. And I don't think I ever knew what I was really doing, where I would just like try to start sprinting or something like that, figuring, okay, this is running, and it would just tire myself out and then just go walking the rest of the way. Yeah. But, you know, when the wife got into like exercising a little more, going to the gym and doing some running there, I kind of joined in on it, and it slowly paced. You finally realize it literally is all just in the breathing. And starting off again, get like a 5K, then I kind of moved up to 4 miles, and took a while to get to 10K. And I mean, we kind of pushed it doing the half marathon, but we got through it.
Yeah. Half marathon's impressive, because I've done a lot on and off running in my life, and usually my knees and shins are just shot. Could be from old injuries and whatnot. So the idea of a half marathon was fun to me, but I don't know. I don't know if my legs could. I'm sure I could if I really set my mind to be like, that was my actual goal, instead of just the act of running frequently, I guess. If that was my goal, like to run that distance. But it's still impressive to get to that mileage that quickly.
Well, I mean, I still got some work to do, because I will say, like, probably around mile 9-ish or so, the right knee was starting to get really sore.
And,
yeah, so there was some pieces where I had to slow down to jogging, some walking in there. I mean, even the wife, she made a little crucial mistake going into this. She just figured that... No. That's given.
Crucial mistake.
Yeah. Like what she really into her exercise and stuff like that. So she did like a 10K earlier in the week, just practicing. And the day before, she did like one of her beach body workouts, and she felt that early. So some of it was like going back and kind of like pushing her. It's like, come on, you know, we got to work through this, catch up, because she was starting to get worried about pushing through on that. And then at the end, I had to start like talking to myself, because like I said, the knees were sore. And add to it, it was a pretty decent downpour here in Georgia on that Saturday. So the shoes were wet, the socks were rubbing.
The rain's fun, like, for a little while. It's like, oh, it's fun. And then after a while, like, oh, man, this kind of blows.
Well, when it gets to the shoes, and then, like, the socks are soaked, and you could tell, like, it's rubbing against, like, your toes in ways where it starts getting sore, that's when it really gets to you. But I think it ended with us getting a pace around like 12, a little over 12 minutes a mile. So that's pretty good. And I know I could have done better. I got to get more work on the right knee for the very least. I got to figure out better ways of stretching and stuff like that. I think my biggest accomplishment was I only had to run to the porta potty once during the marathon.
All right.
Thank you, bladder, for really pushing through. Because I got a weird thing, like when we're about to do like a real run, I guess I get nervous and I gotta pee like 3 or 4 times.
Ah, that happens. Sometimes I'm nervous to do a set, even though, you know, could have done it 400 times. I'll pee, do whatever before I even go up. I think it's like that's a normal reaction to things that are stressful. Now, are you a music in the ears guy? Are you able to run with no music? See, I have to listen to something.
No, I'm actually the opposite. Like when we started running, I had the earphones on and listening to music and stuff like that. I think I just basically I'm the kind of guy, I can't think of stuff while I'm doing this because then I get obsessed. And what I was finding was, like, when we started and I was trying to get my breathing down, stuff like that, when music would start playing, I would start doing, like, calculations in my head of how long it should be when I complete a mile.
Okay.
And then when it's, like, the fourth song's playing, what's going on? I should have hit that mile. And then it just gets into my head. I'm getting aggravated, and I just start slowing down. So I just need, like, I just go out there. The phone's in my pocket to keep track, but it's all in my head.
Yeah, see, I silence is, like, deafening for me when I'm working out or doing anything. It's like I need some kind of distraction because I start focusing on everything else. I start focusing, like, oh, the my knee hurts. Whatever it is, like, I start focusing on everything that's around me, I guess, or everything that else I could focus on, and I start thinking about how long it is, especially something with running, which is like a monotonous thing for a long time. I start focusing on the monotony and the time. Like, if I put on, like, a podcast that's an hour long or something like that, like, see, that, like, takes me out, and, like, I just try to, like, tune into listening to it and not even thinking about my run. My wife is the total opposite. She's like you. She doesn't like any sounds, nothing. She just likes to run and just focus on her, I guess, gait and whatever is going on. So, I don't know. I guess different strokes.
Yeah, it was interesting. And then we found out some people, I guess, I don't want to say cheating, but it was kind of interesting when we looked at the results, and the fastest half marathon was about 20 minutes. wow. It's like, did you tell somebody you were going a little early there, buddy? I don't know. Like I said, it was pouring, so I guess some people were like, screw this, and just got off the course. But it was just kind of like, damn, we got this gold medal next year.
Now, is your goal just to do it? Like, do you ever, like, is your long-term goal to try to win some of these things, or is your just to kind of do it for fun?
It's just doing, I wouldn't even say I do it for fun. I do it just as like a kind of a accomplishment, if you will.
Right.
Like the wife and I was talking, she's like, oh, we're obsessed with running. And I'm like, I don't really feel that I'm obsessed with running. Like, I feel like if I don't feel like running, I'm not going to run at all. I just don't feel like it because, like, at one point, like, when we were training for this, like, the excitement goes and somebody's like, oh, we should train for a marathon. And I'm like, and there's nothing in my mind that says I want to
do that,
do a marathon, because I just sit back and say, okay, a half a marathon's going to take 2 hours minimum. I mean, where I'm at, obviously 2.5 hours. So you got to double that for a real marathon. Then you got to say, well, I got to spend weekends doing at least 2 hours, and then at least 3 hours, and at least 4 hours. And I'm like, you know, I mean, when I get home, I barely have time as is, and I don't want to give up my life for running. I'm very happy what running has done. It's made my wife very happy. We both lost a ton of weight. I'm almost down to 200 right now. So, but as for, like, oh, go to the next step or whatever, I'm happy as it is. We're signing up for another half a marathon in March. If I don't do another one after that, I'm not going to exactly cry.
Yeah.
I like doing 5Ks and 10Ks because you get your exercise and I'm out of there. But I don't need to prove anything. I mean, if I'm doing it where, like, the wife's not like, let's run it together, I probably push myself a little harder to try to beat some people, but I'm not sitting back saying I'm getting the number one slot.
That makes sense. I mean, I'm the same way. When I think of a marathon or something like that, I'm like, wow, That's like 4 hours, and that's weeks leading up to, if not months, if not a year, training for something in time. And I think of all the other things I'm into and what I enjoy, and I do enjoy some downtime here and there. I'm like, you really, I mean, that has to be your thing. You know, like, it has to be just the way the sport is, the way the activity is, running, just time is such a giant factor in that. You know, whereas, like, I can go to the gym and work out really hard for 40 minutes and I feel pretty good, you know, whereas running, time is what makes you a good runner, basically, unless you're sprinting. That's a different thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been doing better at my stalking, so I don't have to run after my prey as much. So correct. I'm good.
You're good. You're good. Well, yeah. It's funny. I guess I'll end on this before we go. So if you've listened to this show in the last couple of weeks, you know, or months, I blew out my ankle a couple months. Oh, actually, it's been a couple months now. August 1st was when it happened.
Yep.
So I went back to the doctor recently, and we're trying to ramp up the PT. I'm trying to do everything to avoid surgery. I really don't want to do it. I don't think I would do well with it, especially since he told me the surgery is probably 6 weeks of no weight bearing on the foot, which is boot and crutches for 6 weeks. And I am not the person to sit still and do nothing and veg out. I can't do it. So I'm nervous about just that, just the idea of that, not even the surgery, just the idea of being laid up for that long is like, I'm not
like, what does the surgery entail? Are they like cutting out something, or are they
basically tightening all the ligaments that were torn? So basically, I guess like they stretch to a certain point and tear. That could be completely wrong, but this is kind of how I explained it to me. But once they tear, they're kind of stretched out, right? They don't go back to the way they're supposed to be. So it's basically like shortening the ligaments and tightening them back up again. So the support.
Okay, so here's what we'll do. I'll come up to Jersey.
Okay.
I'll bring a little knife. I'll cut you open. Mm-hmm. I'll put some rubber bands in there. All right. You know, we won't touch your tendons. You know, that sounds weird.
All right.
So I'm just gonna glue some rubber bands in there. Stretch them out. You know, we'll be set. I'll get the good rubber bands. I won't get the dollar store ones. I'll get you like the Dollar General ones, which are like two something.
You're a pal.
You know,
and what are we talking about price wise? We got what do we
just have a six pack there for me. Wow. I'm gonna have a couple while I'm doing it, so you know, you know, I'm not really fond of blood, so I gotta warn you, when I cut you, I'm gonna be turning away as I'm just gonna chop into you.
Gotcha. All right, well, it's probably a cheaper and safer option, so maybe we'll talk about it one day.
Have you thought about using all of our endorsement money to go over to Europe and get the stem cells like Kobe?
I would love some stem cells treatment. Panama is not that far. They do that there. I can get some stem cells blasted into there. In fact, I saw an advertisement for a stem cell seminar right up the street from me. I was like, And then also my cousin who's PT, like a physical therapist doctor, apparently he was able to go. And they were able to have a couple like trial, like people who could be trial candidates for stem cells, and they could see how they work. I'm like, oh my God, give me that. Throw some stem cells in this ankle and let's get on with it. It's like apparently like the fountain of youth.
Is it legal in this country? What's the deal nowadays?
It's not legal like the way it is over there, where like you could just go for like an outpatient, like blast it in there. Apparently they use it for different things, but it's not like completely out there for a lot of the uses it can be. So I went back to PT again, the orthopedist, and he's like, look, I want you to, I can't really run yet, he's like, I really want you to get on a bike and do a lot of bike work. And a stationary bike is pretty boring. Like you could sit on the bike for hours and it's like, oh, you know, like you burn nothing. Kind of very boring, kind of very monotonous. And so I decided that if I'm going to bike, I'm going to make sure I get a workout in here.
Right.
So I noticed the gym had spin classes included in my membership. So I'm like, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to give this thing a try. First, I'm going to wait it out to make sure, like, I'm going to stalk the class and make sure there's other guys in the class, because you don't want to be the only guy in there. I've done yoga once or twice there, and I will be like one or two of the guys there, and I'm kind of uncomfortable. But I don't want to be the only guy, like, riding the bike and, like, feel like girls thinking I'm just, like, there to, like, be a creep.
So you feel like our guests and all. It's just, it's a girl's life, and you're trying to sneak into it.
Exactly, trying to crack that code.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But, so I did, so the first day, I go and I do my normal workout with some weights and whatnot, and I'm kind of keeping an eye on the little room that the spin's in. I'm like, oh, man, it's just girls, it's just girls, it's just girls. And the class started at 6, and it's like, I got there at like 5:35 doing my thing, and I walk over pretending I'm like getting a sip of water. And I walk away scared. Then I'm like, okay. I'm going in. I walk away scared. There's no dude. Then around 5:59, like a minute before the class starts, I see like three or four dudes like walk in, not together, like kind of separately. And I'm like, okay, all right. I had to like mentally talk myself into going this thing. I'm like, okay, you can do this. You can do this. It's not gonna be that bad. I'm good. I just go, and it was fine. It was fine. The other guys, I kind of, of course, I always try to find a bike like in the back, in the corner, and then I'm like kind of embarrassed because like the woman's like, "You ever do a spin class?" Like the instructor in front of, "Ever do a spin?" I'm like, "Well." I remember in college we did like a spin thing, and I'm like, I always sat there, it's been a long time. And like in my head, I'm like, I don't remember any of this. Like, I'm going to look at everybody else and just do what they're doing.
I'm going to go on the bike and just ride it. That's the key to it. And I've done a lot of spin classes in college. I got drunk and really dizzy, and I spun around and my spin classes.
I was nervous about the spin classes because I get sick on the tilt-a-whirl, you know, like, but
I just see you running around the building and no spinning. Woo!
So I did the class.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard, man. Really hard. Especially the first time, I guess. You know, it's like, it's very repetitive, but at least it's a way to make the bike workout pretty damn intense. And it's like three positions you got to remember. And then they bring in like the weights, and even like the little weights, you kind of feel like, I don't know, a little feminine in a way. But they are no joke, man. They kill it in that thing. And the music's really cheesy and loud. And like, and she's like, come on, guys, you know, like and whatnot. But I ended up doing three of them during the week just to try to get some like actual cardio in and like do something on this ankle where I actually feel like I'm moving and like a human again. So it's been pretty good, and actually I'm like looking forward to this week because last week I did like boxing and like three spin classes, and I'm like, okay, I could actually kind of move again. So I think it's giving me a little confidence that I could be a human again.
Now, as you go to more classes, are you still trying to check out to make sure guys are going in beforehand?
Correct. Actually, I went the first 2 days. First two times I went, plenty of guys. Third time I went on Thursday, and I didn't see any guys until the very last second again. Like, it was only me and two other dudes. And I was a little like, I guess.
Is it true?
I think I'm past it now. I think I could do it with no guys in it, but it's nice to have another dude in there.
Is it true when you see the guys, you go, bro, thank God, and spank them in the ass and like, let's go into class?
Accurate. All right, let's go, baby! Woo! Woo!
Just call me your spin boy!
I got like a highlighter, colored shirt, and some yoga pants on. I'm like, let's go, baby! But no, it's been good. It's funny, like when you step out of your comfort zone sometimes, it's pretty fun, but... It's so funny telling people I'm in spin. I told my mom, she's like, what? My mom also once fell off a stationary bike.
How did that happen exactly?
I don't know. Did a spin class on a cruise and flew off the side of it.
This reboot of Gilligan's Island sounds intriguing to me.
She also like crashed a bike when she was like... My dad had bought her bikes when they got married, and she like crashed it in the first day. Bikes are just not my mother's thing. But, Berlo, let's get the hell out of here. It's been a good cast here. So, anything to promote before we go?
Yeah, if you're in the Georgia or Alabama area and you're looking to buy a new home, I've got an agent for you to check out. Her name is Dawn Smethy. She was selling houses up in New Jersey and Pennsylvania for many years, and now she's come down here. So help her build her business, and she's very pleasant to talk to, and she'll show you around. So if you're interested, you can call her at 770-254-0079 or email her at d.smethy@cbbullard.com.
All right, and I'm going to promote a former guest on the show, a musician that I very much enjoy. And we had him on earlier this year. He goes by the name of J.S. Andara. He's actually from Nairobi, Kenya. And he came to America and had a really big hit album. In fact, he is nominated for a Grammy for Best Americana Album coming up in the Grammys. So obviously, clearly, we hope he wins that. But it'd be really cool.
We better be part of the speech when he wins also.
So his music's really cool. Go check out Tales of America. J.S. Andara, O-N-D-A-R-A. And wish him luck. I guess the Grammys come soon. I don't even know when the Grammys are, but I assume they're sometime soon. But that's it. That's it. Time to go. Catch us on a bunch of... We're on a bunch of other platforms. We're on all your podcast platforms, but we're also on Discovery County Radio Network. We are on comingrightup.org. We are also on Denville Radio. So go support those groups and some of the programming they have. And that's it. And the best thing you can do for us, guys, is leave a review on iTunes. And the... I guess the very best thing you can do is share the show with your friends and say you liked it and whatnot, and then simply helps us get the thing out there. We'll be back next week, guys. We'll try to keep this thing rolling. That's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace out, Cub Scout.
Bye-bye.